Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting next to me, as usual, with a sunny disposition, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there!
And today, unfortunately, we have some serious things to talk about.
Actually, we have some pretty scary stuff to talk about. This, I think, is even scarier than our zombie computers and Halloween shows combined.
Really?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
So we're going to talk today about cyber war.
Arg.
It's not pirate war.
Oh.
Cyber war. Well, cyber war. So we're not talking about Tron here.
No. Nor are we talking about war games.
No. Both of which are awesome movies.
Yes.
So put them to the top of your Netflix queue. No, we're talking about using computers to either spy upon or sabotage or otherwise inflict some sort of harm upon a nation. And this can be done by one of a dozen different entities. That's one of the scary things about cyber war.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, all right, so in classic warfare, you know, usually you would talk about two different nations or perhaps two different factions within a nation
mm-hmm.
fighting one another. Pretty easy to identify who the parties involved are, right?
Normally.
Yeah, it's the guys shooting at you.
Right. And normally they have, you know, uniforms of some kind on. So you know not to shoot your own guy.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some general little rules that make it easier to know which guys are the ones you're supposed to be shooting. Cyber war is not quite that clean cut.
Nope.
The problem with cyber war is that the attacks can come from anywhere. They can come from another country. They can come from patriots within another country that are acting on their own. They could come from essentially a mercenary, a hacker that's hired to do this sort of thing. They could come from someone who's just trying to cause mischief and they don't have any other motives. So it's an attack that can come from another country, or it could come from within the country that is being attacked. I mean, you know, you're talking about sort of a cyber terrorism in a way.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, it could be somebody sitting in his jammies in his living room.
Yep.
And the computer, you know, it doesn't need to be somebody out, you know, skulking around the streets or, you know, somewhere in a foxhole.
Heck, it could be someone parked in your driveway hacking into your Wi-Fi.
Good point.
I mean, that's why we're talking about how scary this is. It's, on another level, it's also scary because it takes so little, relatively speaking, to perform an effective cyber attack. Now, when you're talking about a traditional attack from one nation to another, you're talking about billions of dollars worth of equipment, of personnel, you know, the things that have to go behind a war machine. I mean, that's a huge investment. When you're talking about cyber attacks, you're talking about, you know, a computer and a computer connection. And, you know, you might have a couple of other little bells and whistles to help you along, but you don't necessarily need it if you know what you're doing and you have the right software. So it's one of those things where for a very low, small entrance fee, I guess you could say, you could have a huge, huge impact.
As a matter of fact, your computer could be used to carry out a cyber attack.
Yes.
If you've installed some kind of malware, like a virus or a worm that can turn your machine into a zombie, someone else can direct your computer to send email on a denial of service attack, which basically floods computers with spam and other requests, if you will, for information. The thing is, that doesn't require any cost on the part of the attacker at all, because all the machines are essentially donated, you know, from somebody else.
Right. And to make matters worse, when anyone in authority tries to trace the source of the attack, they might come to your computer and never find the person who actually infected your computer in the first place. So then you become the person of interest, the person who's under suspicion for committing an attack. And the whole time you were completely unaware. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's another big, big issue with the cyber warfare problem. Even when you can detect an attack and trace it back, you can never be 100% sure that the last place you trace it back to is, in fact, the original spot of the attack. Mm-hmm. Because there are these, you know, there are things like proxy sites. There are these zombie computers where there's always the possibility that there's one more link you haven't found yet that will take you back even further. So that's, you know, if you were to detect, say, an attack and you say, well, we've traced it back to China, you can never be sure that the Chinese government was behind it. It could have been patriots in China who had the same sort of goals as the government of China, but were acting on their own. Or it could have even been people in a totally different country that just managed to use proxy sites in China to fool you into thinking that's where the attack came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's really insidious. And you might wonder, well, how vulnerable are we to these sort of attacks? And I guess it really depends on which system you're talking about. Because, you know, the internet is a network of networks, right?
Right. So any given network or any given computer could be the weak spot.
Right.
You know, and there are just tons of computers as part of the internet. You know, every time your computer is hooked up for internet access, you become part of this giant cloud.
Right.
So the really sophisticated crackers, those are the really nasty hackers. Those are the ones who can find ways to manipulate a network in ways that, you know, most people don't think of.
Right. And to give you an idea of how vulnerable certain systems can be, back in 1997, there was a secret experiment the Department of Defense commissioned it. It was called Eligible Receiver.
I remember that.
Yeah, this was a kind of an eye opener. Now, a lot of Eligible Receiver, a lot of that mission remains classified, so we don't know all the details. But what we do know is that part of the experiment involved getting a group of hackers together, giving them some very basic computing hardware and software, and telling them to try and break their way into the Pentagon's computer system. And it took them 3 days using basic computers and basic software. 3 days just for regular hackers. These aren't necessarily the people who have an actual motive to break into the Pentagon other than the fact that they're part of an experiment, right?
Right.
It's not like they have a government breathing down their neck saying, we need access to this information. So that's pretty sobering to think that within 3 days, one of the nation's most important computing systems was compromised, even though it was an inside job and an experiment.
Right. Well, there have been attempts to shore that up since then. And,
yes.
And in fact, they conduct regular exercises in order to do that. In fact, there was one not that long ago. Every year, there are students from Army, Navy, Air Force, and the Coast Guard and Merchant Marine, as well as the Naval Postgraduate Academy and the Air Force Institute of Technology. And basically, it's undergrads. Okay. We're given the opportunity to defend themselves from an attack by the NSA. Every year they undergo this experiment, and West Point held out the longest, and the Army got to defend their title. But they were using Linux computers. But this is apparently a normal thing. The Defense Department is only graduating 80 students a year from schools of cyber war in the United States, according to the New York Times article that I read about it. And if you're wondering, this is the 57th Information Aggressor Squadron. They're based in Nellis Air Force Base.
Wow.
And they are, they make a point of doing this test every year. And, it's one of those things where they are making a conscious effort to attack and defend, computer networks. And apparently the nerds are nerds everywhere, even at West Point. According to the way the article was written, they get a little ribbing for being the geeks of the group. But even the future officers that graduate from there know the importance of the computer network. Because that's one of the very first things they do. They're about to deploy these guys to Afghanistan, as a matter of fact. And the first thing they're going to do is set up a secure internet connection. And they have to be ready to defend themselves against denial of service attacks.
Sure.
And other attacks. So, I mean, they're coming right out of the service academies with knowledge of how to attack and to protect computer networks, military computer networks.
Sure. Usually we call those sort of exercises red team attacks, where a group is designated to play the part of an adversary. And that's the red team. And the red team's job is to achieve their goals by whatever means necessary. So in other words, you're not supposed to necessarily follow a certain protocol or rules. You're supposed to be inventive and creative and try and find new ways to really compromise or defeat the other team. And because that's exactly what the enemy's going to do. The enemy's not going to play by rules necessarily, especially if you're talking about enemies that you can't predict. I mean, they may not even be directly involved with any other government or official agency.
Right.
So government websites or government web servers and systems aren't the only targets. One of the big targets in the United States, and it's been in the news quite a bit over the spring of 2009, is the electric grid. And part of the problem with that is that systems like the electric grid and some water and fuel systems are using the software that directly ties into hardware. And if you just change a few settings, you can cause catastrophic damage to the equipment. There was a video that was on CNN for a while where some electric utility experts showed that with just a couple of tweaks, you could completely destroy a generator by changing some settings through the computer system. And they essentially turned a generator into a pile of scrap metal.
Wow.
It was very sobering to me to see that, because not that long ago, the news broke out that the United States electric grid, certain parts of it anyway, has been under attack by some cyber spies over the last several years.
And they don't really know who it is, right?
Right, right. Yeah. They've traced them back mostly to China and Russia. But again, both China and Russia deny that they had anything to do with it. But I mean,
of course,
wouldn't you?
The thing is, it you know, those countries are gradually becoming more and more computer centric.
Right.
And it, you know, it could be anybody. It could be, right. You know,
it could be that they are directly involved. Or it could be that it's groups of individuals within those countries. Or like we said, it could even be that the attacks are ultimately originating somewhere else, but we're only able to trace them back as far as Russia and China.
True enough.
So that's the other issue with the internet, is that it is a global entity. And so law enforcement officials only have so much authority to pursue cyber attacks. Mm-hmm. You know, they can cross over borders easily on the internet, but law enforcement can't. They mm-hmm. don't necessarily have the authority to pursue an investigation beyond the borders of, you know, whatever their jurisdiction is. So that also makes life much more complicated when you're talking about fending off cyber warfare attacks.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't even that long ago that some countries were complaining of real cyber attacks launched on their infrastructure.
Right.
Like Estonia.
Yes.
Not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And they were blaming the Russians for that right. attack. But that was back in 2007, all those years ago.
Yeah. All those both years ago?
Yeah. Well, you know, they say that internet time is sort of like dog years. It's about, so that would make it about 14 years ago.
Yeah, right.
In internet time.
I guess so. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the example of the Dalai Lama's office, the Tibetan office that was, they knew they were being watched.
Right.
They were absolutely certain that their systems had been compromised. And they hired a Canadian firm to investigate. And the Canadian firm found that indeed there were programs installed upon the Dalai Lama's computer systems, mm-hmm. and that it appeared to be coming from an offshore island off the coast of China.
Mm-hmm.
And the software even included controls that would allow people on the other end to activate audio and video software and hardware, so that they could turn on, if the computer had a webcam or a microphone, they could turn it on and turn it into a remote listening station.
Hmm.
So they could actually spy on the goings-on of these offices remotely.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is a very real problem worldwide. It's not just something that we have to worry about in the United States or you know, any other specific nation. It's mm-hmm. it's pretty much if you have computers, there's a good chance there's another party somewhere that's really interested in finding out what you know and what you don't know and what you're up to.
Yep. And there's even another component to it that I know we were going to stick mainly to talking about how you could use computers to launch computer attacks.
Mm-hmm.
But another facet of this that I think is interesting was sort of relates to a blog post I wrote in early April on the Tech Stuff blog that talked about the Moldovan pro-democracy protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't launching computer attacks, but what they were doing was using social networking sites like Twitter and Facebook to coordinate their efforts, sort of like flash mobs. They could go ahead and use computer networks like those and text messaging to discuss where and when they were going to organize and meet and hold a demonstration.
Sure.
So that's, I mean, that's, you know, relying on the network staying up and rather than taking them down. But it's just kind of funny because, you know, you think of Facebook and Twitter as something we use for fun or to keep up with people. And just another way that you can use them to actually, I mean, those could just as well have been used to hold a violent, you know, attack on someone, say, you know, meet at this corner at 1:40 in the afternoon, you know, and have everybody show up and start fighting. Well, if the law enforcement is unaware of it or the military forces are unaware of it, you know, that could be a devastating attack, and it could be used by virtually anybody.
Sure. And, you know, the dangers of these attacks go beyond just damaging a network or shutting down a system. One of the big fears that a lot of security folks have is that what if you were to coordinate a physical attack with a cyber attack. Mm-hmm. So what if you were to target a major city and first you bring down the city's power grid through a cyber attack, and then you couple that with an actual physical attack like bombs or whatever.
Right.
And that together that would cause a real panic, because suddenly you have an entire population that doesn't have access to information the way they normally would. Mm-hmm. And yet there is obviously chaos going on. And that really is the, you know, true definition of terrorism there. You're inspiring terror in the victim. Mm-hmm. Now, would this be nationwide? Probably not. For one thing, the electric grid is really much a regional kind of thing.
Sure.
But it's something that every region could theoretically be vulnerable to without the right security measures in place. Mm-hmm. Now that sort of attack obviously would have to come from a much more organized group. It would have to come from a country or organization that had a strong financial backing to be able to fund the physical side of the attack.
Right.
So that narrows down the list of possible suspects who could do that, but it's still within the realm of possibility. And it's one of those things that, you know, keep security people up at night.
Sure. Sure. And you know, I'm really not certain what we're going to be able to do short of pulling all the plugs to make it a complete and utter impossibility that they could carry out those kinds of attacks, because it's just going to require constant monitoring and searching for vulnerabilities. That's why the efforts of those who are participating in those computer security war games, if you will.
Right.
They're so important because they're actively searching for those vulnerabilities in the system and try to find ways to patch them up before they can be hacked into. But, you know, I think that anytime that you update those systems, you're going to open up new vulnerabilities and new problems. And, you know, it's just one of those things where the people whose job it is to pay attention to it are just going to have to stay constantly vigilant,
yeah,
to prevent something like that from happening.
And it is even more complicated when you think that, you know, not every system runs on the same software or operating system or whatever. So some of them are proprietary, and so you might find something that works as a great security measure for one system, but it's mm-hmm. not at all applicable to any other. So it is a huge challenge. I mean, well, what's the response to that? Do you go ahead and try and standardize everything so that hopefully the same measures will work across the board? Because if you do that and someone does find a vulnerability, suddenly they've got a vulnerability that works across all systems.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, and it's, there are no easy answers. We've got people who are way smarter than I am working on this. And I wish them the best.
Yeah,
because
no kidding.
This is scary stuff. Now, are we all in danger of something like this happening anytime soon? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I'm not staying up at night worrying the next day about that's going to be the day when the cyber war attack's going to happen.
Right.
But it is possible. It's just not necessarily something that, you know, that I'm going to have to worry about on a day-to-day basis.
Well, the more systems come online in more places around the world, I think it's going to be, it becomes sort of like, you know, aerial assaults were after, you know, that became a real possibility in the 20th century. It's going to be something that a well-planned military strategy is going to include. You know, you got your ground troops, you know, air, sea, and internet.
Yeah.
You know, anything that can take down the computer network, the communications network, the power grid all at one time. If you can do that, then, you know, you'll panic the citizenry, and that just gives you a better chance.
I can pretty much guarantee that just about every modern nation in the world has some sort of plan like that in place. Mm-hmm. And I can also guarantee that they're not going to share that, because that kind of defeats the purpose of the plan.
Yeah. But, you know, my internet connection goes down plenty without anybody attacking it. So,
and I occasionally lose power if I sneeze too hard. So, or maybe I black out. It's one of the two. Either way.
All right, then.
I'm done.
That's all I have that okay. I can divulge to the public.
Now that we've scared the pants off of you, it's time for listener mail.
And Goodness knows that scares the pants off me.
And you know what? In retrospect, the alarm noise is probably not the most appropriate one to play at the end of this podcast.
Probably not.
I apologize, folks. I should have picked something like kittens purring.
Mmm, kittens.
Well, today's listener mail comes from Tom from Kansas. When I call a radio station to try and win a contest, would I have an advantage if I were closer to the radio station or closer to a tower that is closest to the station? Sometimes when I call, I never get through. Who's getting through and why? Tom, I was getting through. No, seriously, I used to have like the bat phone into the local radio station. I won so many tickets from that station that they actually had to say, hey, how long has it been since the last time you won? I'd be like, 62 days, and your policy says 60. So hands them over. Does it help if
you did too? I could just see you doing that.
Yeah. Anyway. Does it help if you're closer? No. Does it help if your tower is closer? No. These signals are moving really, really fast.
Well, otherwise you couldn't have a conversation
right.
in normal time, you as you were pointing out to me.
Yeah, exactly. These signals are moving essentially at the speed of light, or close enough to it. Because if they weren't moving that fast, when you spoke into the phone, the person on the other end would experience a really long delay, and then they would hear you, and then they would speak, and you would hear a really long pause, and then you would hear them, and then you'd speak. That's not how it happens. Conversations happen in near real time. So we're talking about really, really fast signals. Now, what is happening, Tom, is that the radio station has only so many incoming lines available. After that, you're going to get a busy signal. And those lines are going to fill up pretty quickly, especially if the radio station has a large audience.
Yeah, if you have a switchboard with 10 lines.
Yeah,
and
typical switchboard.
275 people are calling in.
That means 265 people are getting a busy signal.
Yep.
Or an all circuits are busy recording, which is probably what you're hearing.
Yeah, and that's what I always heard when I called in.
You know,
so don't feel bad, Tom.
Until I worked for a very specific company that had a particular phone system, that's why I used to get two. I don't know what it was about that phone system. I think it was nothing at all. I think it was just luck and coincidence. So I don't think there was any causation. There might have been correlation, but no causation.
Right.
At any rate, all I can say is keep trying. Lines are open. but yeah, as soon as a line does go open, someone else is trying to call, it's going to fill up really quickly. It's really just, you know, kind of a crapshoot.
All right then.
All right, Tom. Thanks for writing in. If any of you have any questions you'd like answered, write in at techstuff@howstuffworks.com. Remember, you can find out all about fun activities like cyber war at howstuffworks.com.
You make it sound so fun.
Well, I was trying to, you know, lighten up the mood after that podcast.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle.
So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.